Hello everyone, this is Kevin Ann at Eagle Strong Voice. It's February the 21st, 2025, and I've got a couple of reflections to share with you today. It's called A Couple of Notes from the Nut House, a post-American anthology. A quote from Lenny Bruce, the comedian, "You got to dig those founding fathers of ours, talking about liberty for all and then locking up their slaves in the pig pen at night. Yeah, man, supreme bullshit artists, those guys. Face it, they were nuts. You got to be crazy to be a true blue American." And he said that in 1964 in L.A., and the same year a U.S. Army officer in Vietnam, describing a battle, said, "To save the village, we had to destroy it." Which brings to mind a quote from a Trump supporter in Philadelphia in October of last year, when he said, "If he's going to save our country, he doesn't need the Constitution." Well, in that spirit, my first reflection is called Big Bob to the Rescue. It was the first hour of my first night shift in the Nut House. All the members, the term patients was officially eschewed, were all drugged and snug in their beds, and head nurse was giving me the scoop. "Most of them are voluntary, so they never give us any trouble," the hawk-eyed lady explained. "It's the involuntaries you have to watch yourself around. But not to worry, in all my years here, we've never had a serious incident." Well, some divine trickster must have heard her words just then, for in the wink of an eye there appeared a bulky orderly grasping a less-than-jolly young man. It turns out he was a runaway from Riverview Hospital, Vancouver's medieval psychiatric prison. "We need a room for the night innkeeper," joked the white-jacketed goon. Nurse Ratchet was not amused, and she let the intruders know it. Shrugging, the joker handed her the keys to his oversized prisoner's handcuffs and departed without even a good night or a good luck. During my training for the job of psychiatric assistant, I'd been told that violent incidents were rare on our ward since all the members were tranked to their eyebrows. Ergo, my code red instructions on how to physically restrain someone seemed as useful as tits on a bull. Big Bob, which is the name I bestowed on the hulky young inmate after the fact, proved otherwise. Oblivious to who and what she was facing, head nurse turned her wrath on the guy who had unwisely been released from his hand restraints. She just began to issue an angry admonition at him when the 6'2" hulk reared back and landed a haymaker to her jaw that knocked her clear across the nurse's station. Big Bob looked down at me and smiled. We both stared at his impressive handiwork as she lay unconscious on the floor. What else could I do but smile back at him? When another nurse, hearing the kerfuffle, appeared around the corner, I smiled at her too, and I said as quietly as possible, "Code red, please." It took five of us to restrain Big Bob, who absorbed enough Thorazine to stop an ox. And I learned a lesson that night about how to handle loonies. Never assume anything. Big Bob and head nurse are never far from my mind these days, and not just for the obvious reasons. For me, they are interchangeable characters in a tragic comedy called America. Whether a member or an official of the Nut House, we all seem to be caught in a loony bin without windows or exits. After working on the University of British Columbia psychiatric ward for 3 months, I quit my job, even though I counted on it to pay my way through seminary. I just couldn't handle it anymore. For one thing, I found it increasingly difficult to tell the difference between the sane people and the crazy ones. In fact, the patients seemed a lot more genuine and less dissociated than the doctors and nurses. Like one old guy told me, "I couldn't take the insanity of the world anymore. At least in here I know what's coming at me every day." Meanwhile, the so-called sane staff members routinely electroshocked the brains of members, turning them into vegetables to cure them of their depressing memories. At some point, the generalized insanity becomes too unbearable, even for the most well-adjusted minion, and what's called a psychotic break occurs. Things fall apart for individuals and societies, starting from the inside out, and no one is exempt. America, as the epitome of a deranged global culture, has reached such a breaking point. And so, as with Big Bob or a nation caught in a collective psychosis, I never assume anything, besides the fact that they, or rather we, are capable of anything. Here's some telling facts. Suicide has become the second most common cause of death for Americans in the prime of their lives between the ages of 18 and 30. Imagine, second most common cause. And 3/4 of Americans surveyed said they hate their jobs and find their lives meaningless. In a corporate system where people are functional cogs in a machine that has no ultimate meaning besides self-perpetuation, people are trapped like bullet catchers in a war who are here because we're here because we're here because we're here. To quote a popular World War I soldier's song that I picked up from my grandfather Ross Annett, who took part in that particular loony show. History shows us that massive societal nihilism tends to give rise to totalitarian regimes, whether it's in Germany in 1933 or America in 2025. The adept dictator knows how to pretend to offer to the multitudes the purpose and hope that had been stripped from their lives. And in grateful thanks, the people joyfully surrender their hearts and minds to one man. Once that dark machine is set in motion, nothing can stop it except external conquest or internal collapse. It took 50 million dead people to halt Hitlerism for a while. And today? All in all, it's a strange time to be laughing at ourselves. Or maybe it's precisely the right time. You be the judge. Maybe it's because I'm almost 70 now and have been kicked in the teeth enough times to have the long view that no amount of crap or official nuttiness phases me anymore. All that's left these days is laughter. And that's a good thing because, like our heart of hearts, it's the part of us that the insanity and the head nurses can never reach. So here's to you, Big Bob. Keep on swinging. Part B. On loyalty oaths and little boys who need to be told they're loved. Soon after the man who would be king dumped his rump onto the Oval Throne, he announced that in order to keep their job, every cop and intelligence officer in America must pass a loyalty test by answering a single question. Were the events of January 6, 2021 an inside job? Say what, Donnie? The question seems to be composed by a 10-year-old functional illiterate. I mean, what does an inside job mean anyway? It depends who you're talking to. In Joe McCarthy's salad days, state thuggery was clearer and more explicit. Are you now or have you ever been a member of the communist, read Democratic, party? But then the 1950s was a simpler time when presidents actually kept their oaths of office. As much as I'm fond of Harry Truman, because no other chief executive ever cussed reporters to their faces and threatened to punch them out, he is nevertheless the culprit when it comes to the infamous loyalty oath upon which Mr. T is basing his infantile inquisition. In 1948, the Democratic President Truman helped usher in McCarthyism's reign of terror by insisting that federal civil servants fess up about those clothes they donated to the Russians during World War II or any labor or socialist rallies they ever attended. Of course, by that standard, give him hell, Harry himself qualified as a, quote, red, since as a senator and then president, he routinely attacked the Wall Street big money boys, supported civil rights for blacks, and called for socialized health care. Right on, Harry. Donnie T., of course, is no farm boy from Missouri. The filthy rich bugger has never worked a day in his life. But that, perversely, is his attraction to many broke and struggling Americans. Wilhelm Reich called it the little man syndrome. Referring to Hitler, Reich said that when the dictator comes to power, it feels to the anonymous man in the street like he has too. This little man lives vicariously through the tyrant and submerges himself in him, even though, ironically, this infallible role model is an empty vessel. As Wilhelm Reich wrote in 1932, only a full-blown psychotic can assume absolute power and exert dictatorial rule, since his capacity to love and share in the vulnerability of human emotions and the give and take of interactions with people is entirely absent. He must compensate for this lack of an inner identity by firmly controlling the outer world and everyone in it. Emotionally, the dictator is an abandoned child seeking love but never finding it. He must have everyone around him continually sacrifice themselves to demonstrate and prove their undying devotion to him, even though he's incapable of returning such love. He insists on complete loyalty and sees treason and treachery in anyone not demonstrating it. And that's from a commentary on the book by Reich called The Mass Psychology of Fascism. Donald Trump fits Wilhelm Reich's description to a T. His sad little boy was put in the Oval Office by many millions of other sad little boys and girls who think that by showing him their complete loyalty, they in turn will receive it, and thereby know that they are worthy and lovable human beings. So there you have it, kids. Just answer in the right way the question, were the events of January 6, 2021 an inside job? Do that and you'll be happy forever and ever. Won't you? And to end from a quote by the playwright Peter Weiss in his play Marat Sade, work for and bless the privileged few. What's good for them is good for you. This is Kevin Annan, Eagle Strong Voice, murderbydecree.com. Stand by for more.